Jones and Mike, real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say. About family, women, philosophy, politics, history, people, money, pop culture, kids, fighting, business, life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour, what's a bigger time waster at work? Sex or hoops? And really, how great is it being the biggest, baddest dude on the block?
The U.S. of A.
This is Jones and Mike. Jones and Mike.
Jones, you know I admire you greatly, and I haven't always, but I admire you greatly now, and especially as the years go on. It seems like my admiration for you grows fonder and stronger.
Would that be because of my honest nature?
It's because you're an honest and open guy, no question, but you're a real man. Now, I don't think many people would see you walking down the street and go,
there goes a real man.
Now that's a real man.
Sadly, I would have to agree with you. I don't think that's a cheap shot. I think most people would feel that way.
Your eyes constantly gazing at the ground as you walk, meander throughout the highways and byways of Chicagoland.
Right.
You don't outwardly have the appearance of a real man, but you are a real man. You're not anything like the sniveling, weeping 50% of Americans I see this week who are crying that their brackets have been busted.
Oh, I know. That, dude, that whole thing just drives me nuts. Like, the NCAA tournament is the greatest tournament in sports. I love it, and I love watching it. But as you know, I don't like to fill out a bracket because I want to be watching these games and be able, if there is this tremendous upset that's happening, I want to be able to sit there and just root for the upset and not go, oh, my bracket, it's busting. And then everybody always puts that out there like, oh, my bracket's already busted. And they already have this tone of like, I got killed on the stock market today.
And it's really? Like,
every year there's upsets. Every year a top team gets taken out, a one or two or three seed. But then everybody kind of goes on and crows about it like it's only Michigan State is only happening to them.
Yeah, yeah. And there's where I don't understand your thought process. This is the same reason why you don't take part in fantasy football, which, as you know, I love.
Yeah.
And I didn't for years, but then the last several years I've loved it. I love the smack talking. And your premise is that I will root against the Bears, for example, if I've got, you know, Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
Not that I ever would. Who would want that? Who would want that misfortune befalling upon your, you know, you're digging deep if you got Colin starting. But be that as it may, I've never rooted against the Bears when I had, you know, a Raiders player playing against them. So I think that's faulty. I think a real man can go, I'm still going to root for the Bears, but you know what? If they end up getting dusted and, you know, the running back that I started against them had a big day, then that's gravy. Or I won anyway. That sort of a thing.
I
look at
that.
It as hedging on your Sundays.
I don't like that crack in the armor. I want the armor to be intact until it is completely pierced and I am lying dead.
I think you can draw the line between, you know, what's in your heart and what's just on a piece of paper. Now, the guys that are in multiple fantasy football leagues, I don't understand that. I feel like you draft your team, you start your team. Those are your dudes.
Right.
The same people that go and fill out like 9 brackets and then have them all splayed out on the table in front of them, I guess, as they're watching, you know, the first couple of rounds. And they're going with their big red, you know, Sharpie, and they're putting big X's where they lost or whatever.
Yes.
Oh, it's fine. I got one bracket's looking good pretty much still. I don't understand that. It's like, no, if you're going to do the bracket, do one bracket and that's it.
Yeah. Now, I have done brackets in the past, and I have actually won. A couple of years ago, I won one once when it was the office environment was kind of like, I have to do it because it's too small of an office to be one of the people that's not doing it. Then everybody would be asking you. And I happened to win it once, but I just prefer. I love this tournament. It's one of my favorite times of the year. The days are getting longer. They're getting somewhat warmer. Baseball's around the corner. The Hawks are going into the playoffs, and then you have this tournament, and I love it's on during the day, so it can kind of get you through the work day.
Yeah.
I love that kind of thing. I wish, like the World Cup, I would always try to watch the World Cup, squeeze that in during my work day. It just helps get you through it.
Jeez, you need things to help you get through the work day.
Well, I mean, if they're there, I'll take them. If they're there, I'll take them, certainly, and sporting events will do that.
Well, okay. And you know, and I've even been hearing radio commercials, and I think that's brilliant, where people that offer vasectomies will actually tie in the big dance and say, hey, so long as you're going to be watching, you know, TV for a couple of straight days, why not take, you know, your Thursday and Friday off
and get a vasectomy?
That's right. And get your vas deferens clipped, and then you can watch it with ice on your nuts and enjoy yourself rather than sneaking it at work.
Oh, that is...
And then getting a vasectomy in your own time. That's ridiculous.
We'll leave that. I don't need the vasectomy. But that is a brilliant way to promote it. But part of the fun, though, is watching the games at work. I did it this week. We have dual monitors at my office. So one monitor had the game, one monitor had my quote-unquote work.
Jeez, you didn't do anything this week, did you?
You know, it's not so bad. I wasn't so bad. Not really. I mean, I did get stuff done. It wasn't really that bad. Now, it's so much easier in this world now. It's so much easier to do that and to get away with it. Because now you have, like, the NCAA just has their own website up and you can just click from game to game.
Yeah, that's cool.
You don't have to pay. You don't have to sign up for anything. So, like, even when I was at my apartment, I was still just leaving that. I just plugged my computer into my screen and just clicked around that way. It was easier, faster. The screen was perfectly clear. So it's easier to do it now. But I look back and I think some of the best times were when, you know, before they forced HD on us and everything, you know, you could go analog.
Yeah.
I loved having my mini TV.
Yeah.
And bringing that into work. I remember when I used to work at the North Loop News.
Oh.
I think I can even say the name now. I can't imagine that it's any longer around, but I used to have like
are still in business, allegedly this happened.
Right. Yeah. I don't want them to come hunt me down.
I would love it. They sue you for, past wages.
Right.
They add it up. You owe them $72.
15 years after I left them. So it was...
adjusted for inflation, you owe us a check for $72.87.
Right. So, but that was some of my favorite times. I used to have my little mini analog TV, and I used to have it in like this little Rolodex that we had at work. And then if someone was walking towards my desk, I had it set up perfectly where there was the volume dial, and I could... just quickly in one moment, I would practice it before the games would start.
And you'd dry run.
Yeah. So I could just quickly, with one move, I could just kind of have my middle finger lowered a little bit lower than the other fingers on my hand so no one would see anything specific. And I could just quickly roll my finger across the volume dial and then hit the top latch of the little Rolodex flap, and then it would flip over and you couldn't see the TV. And those were like the greatest days to watch the tournament.
You would watch the first two rounds, the Thursday and Friday of the tournament, with a TV in your Rolodex.
Yeah.
And if anybody like a management type would come over near you, you would just flip.
Yeah, I just had a routine that I practiced, that I rehearsed.
Oh, my God.
And I would just, boom, volume go down. I didn't have the volume cranked, but volume would go down, Rolodex top would fall down, and then boom.
And you never got busted.
Never. I've never gotten busted watching games at work.
Now, you accuse me of being one of those people that is so deluded that I believe that I'm getting away with things. But the rest of the world's like, you're not getting away with anything, man. We're just allowing you to get away with it.
Well, you would
think... Is it possible your manager was like, here's this guy again. I don't know. I can't find anybody who doesn't need a drool cup to work here. So he qualifies. But man, I want to fire him every time he does this.
Well, at the North Loop News, that could have very well been the case. Absolutely, that could have been the case. I was the only man without a drool cup, so to speak. But in every other place that I've worked, I've done the same thing. And surely at some point among multiple companies, someone would step up and say, hey.
Even a coworker would pull you aside and be like, look, we all know what you're doing.
No, I think I think there are just some things that people are meant to do and that they're good at. And it's just some. This is just something that I'm good at. Just
goofing off
sports
at work.
At work,
goofing off at work is what really one of your redeeming worker qualities.
I guess, but I have to say, goofing off at work is specific to watching sports. I really don't do a whole lot. Well, I do some other stuff. I squeeze in some book reading, certainly.
You do?
Oh yeah.
At your desk?
Yeah. Yeah, I read articles if I'm like doing something for the show here. Yeah, I do have a couple routines now that I think about it.
All right, more about getting away with goofing off at work next. It's Jones and Mike.
When it comes to finding a holistic doctor near you, where can you turn for help? When you need a cancer doctor who will advocate for a non-surgical, non-chemical course of treatment, where can you find her? When you need a chiropractor or acupuncturist, when you need help with ailments that many doctors and even hospitals just plain turn away, like Lyme disease, who can help you with natural solutions and strategies for diabetes? When you need help to find an integrative, functional, complementary, alternative approach, option, and practitioner, the Health Freedom Network is there. Since 2009, the Health Freedom Network has been a leading resource for natural medicine and health information and research. Now we're also your best resource to give you access to the top docs in a number of specialties, from cancer to stroke, and in modalities from chiropractic to dentistry. The Health Freedom Network's directory at healthfreedomnetwork.com. Better information for better choices. Find your new health practitioner at www.healthfreedomnetwork.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
It's Jones and Mike. I was wondering why you brought in a giant Rolodex today. I thought you were going to be looking up guests that we could book for the show.
No.
What are you watching? Are you watching the tournament right now?
I have on Stephen F. Austin versus Notre Dame.
And do you fill out a bracket?
No.
You don't even fill out a bracket. Like,
nope.
I thought you used to do like one like playfully.
I mean, maybe I had done that in the past, but I really, unless I'm in a situation where I was, say, 2 years ago, where it was like, it was going to be awkward if I didn't fill out a bracket. If I can avoid it, I avoid it.
And how did you do when you did the office pool?
I won it.
Oh, geez.
But that's the only time I won it.
You've only done it one time and you won.
No. The last time I did it, I won it.
That's pretty remarkable.
There's other times that I've done it and I just get dusted and my brackets get busted, but I don't sit there and cry about it because I know that's the nature of this tournament. That's why we watch it.
Well, right. And this is one of the first years that one of the only years that I haven't done one since I was a child. I always did my father's office pool. And you know, an accounting firm, crazy hijinks ensued.
Oh, I bet.
They're probably, and especially this time of the year in an accounting firm, like it's all hands on deck, batting the hatches, 18-hour days.
Yeah, that would be miserable. That sounds miserable anyway, but then how do you get away to see the games?
Like working? That sounds like crazy torture.
Well,
on top of that, 18-hour days and not being able to watch the tournament?
Yeah.
There were probably like, it was like, well, Johnson, you got a vasectomy last year.
I know.
Don't try to pull one over on Skalitzky and Noonan.
Well, it's so weird. It would almost, to be honest with you, if I was an accountant, I wouldn't watch college basketball ever. Like, why? Because once the going gets good, you're out. Like, what's the point? If you can't watch the tournament, like, why watch college basketball at all?
Maybe that explains why I was able to, as a child, win a couple of tournaments through my dad's office pool.
They had no idea what's going on.
And then when I would lose to, like, a woman that, like, literally she was voting. She would call it voting, and she would vote for the team with the color of the uniform that she liked.
I like teal.
Yeah. I like that. I vote for that team's outfits.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was always hard for me as a child to understand. Like, I agonized over my brackets.
Right.
I pulled out Sports Illustrated's from last October and studied this, and then Judy wins. That's not fair. This year I didn't even fill out brackets at all. Like, I was too busy and I just didn't even get around to it.
Yeah, but now the word is that you didn't even really watch, which makes me sick.
I know, I didn't watch because and I watched like a little tiny bit, but I've had things to do for the first time in my life ever, really.
It's Pathetic.
And that's not an indictment on people that are into it. It's just, it just happenstance. But every year, in addition to, you know, liking the tournament as you do, although this year, if I would have done brackets, I would have been blown out. Oh, that sounds like there were a lot of upsets anyway, but like I didn't pay attention to NCAA hoops at all during the season. Mm-hmm. So I would have been killed. I would have been voting for the teal uniforms. But every year I love to read the jaw-dropping statistics that go along with this tournament in terms of lost worker productivity. And it says here from foxbusiness.com just 3 days ago, Chicago's own, I'll add that, they didn't even add that. You got to throw in Chicago's own, Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. They're always the go-to people when someone wants to know something in the media about workers. They go to Challenger, Gray, and Christmas here in Chicago. They estimate that 51 million office workers join office pools during March Madness. Based on the country's average hourly wage of $25.35 an hour is the average hourly wage.
That seems pretty strong.
Damn. I got to start picking up the pace. Jesus. The outplacement consultancy firm of Challenger, Gray, and Christmas estimates that employers lose. Are you sitting down?
Yes. I'm sitting next to you, so you know that.
You're sitting down because you're watching your Rolodex right now.
Right, yeah.
They estimate that employers will lose $1.3 billion in pay to slacking employees per hour of distraction, per hour.
How?
So the lost productivity will approach $4 billion with a B, dollars.
I don't see how that.
That blows my mind. I don't know how you could invest that much time.
Yeah, and how do you really figure that out? I mean, obviously, I'm asking you. It's not like you're going to be able to go, well, actually.
Well, they kind of reverse engineered it. They went, all right, well, we're estimating how many people join the pool. We're throwing some actuary in our firm, estimated how long it takes to fill out the brackets. Then you watch the games, et cetera, et cetera. So I can see how they came up with that number. But it's blowing my mind. I didn't see anybody. And admittedly, we don't have a lot of Rolodex around my offices, Rolodexes around my office, but I didn't see anybody seemingly partaking in any way in the NCAA tournament this week in my office.
See, and that bums me out because to me, that's one of the small joys in life. Like waking up on a Saturday morning, like a sunny Saturday morning, I just love that feeling. Or
at two in the afternoon,
no,
you were going to finish that statement?
No, dude, I'm actually pretty clockwork now about getting up in the morning. I've not really slept in, and every once in a while I do, but not really anymore.
You've reached that glorious age when you couldn't even sleep past 7:30 if you tried.
It's sort of, and sometimes I do when I know I have nothing going on. I'll try to make myself like, you must enjoy this. And sometimes I do it with success, and other times I fall short. But
do you think that, like, oh, dude, the tournament at work, that's bonding with your fellow employees?
Well, it's just even, just in general, when you have any of those moments where you can kind of escape the workday.
God.
Even while you're there. Like, I love the tournament. It's great for that. Every once in a while, especially now, it's so much easier, like with mini iPads and stuff. I can kind of squeeze in a little book reading at work.
Well, you're an author. You can say that.
I'm squeezing in book reading.
Oh.
I can do that a little bit at work. If I want to look up a couple articles at work, I can like print them out and then like walk around the office like I'm looking at stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well,
that's part of the key. You walk around. If you want to do something like that, make sure you have papers in your hand as you're walking around the office. A lot of heavy breathing where you're like, ugh.
This mimeograph machine.
It's
breaking down on me.
Well, whatever. It gives that sense of like, I'm plowing through something here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just
going
you know,
through my Rolodex is the time of year I always clean out my Rolodex.
Well, it's one of those little things where you can just check out of and then you can check back into work like a little more quickly. Like I know people that like smoke up throughout their workday. I think that's kind of a little, I think you really need to look into your life and what you're doing for a living.
Self-examine a little bit.
Yeah, if you feel you need to do that, then there's an issue.
So you what know, are they leave on break time and they go and they smoke a doob?
Yeah, Yeah, they'll do that around lunchtime. I know someone that does that.
And do you just know because you've been with her, or you heard her, this person has done this, or they come back smelling of weed?
I've been told this, and I mean, I know they smoke, but I've been told this that I know one person in particular that's confided in others that she does this. And then I used to work with a woman who would come in high every morning. She would smoke up before she walked out the door. The best, though.
Can you sense that there's a difference in her when she comes back from her smoking?
Not really.
Her productivity is always like just at a flat line.
Well, it's not even a matter of productivity. It's just something where I just take it. If you're smoking pot regularly to get through the workday, then that's an anxiety issue. And then you really have to examine, okay, well, what am I doing for a living? Why is it causing me this anxiety? And boy, Stephen F. Austin just really missed a primetime rebound.
Stop it, Jones. Stop. This is one job that you can't. Look, no one's paying you, but I demand your full attention for 1 hour a week.
Okay, well, that's not going to happen. They get the ball back. Okay, anyway.
Now I sound like I'm talking to my wife. I demand your full attention for 2 minutes a week.
Right, yes.
Okay, 2 minutes a month.
Right.
Fine, 2 minutes a quarter.
Right, right. So, I don't really, I mean, in terms of like, it's seeing like, if you have, that to me is not a production issue. That's an anxiety issue. If you're smoking up on lunch break,
I think it depends on your job. I knew a dude that used to smoke up, but he was like playing like Led Zeppelin records.
Well, okay.
I think you almost have to. If you're going to play all 8 minutes of Kashmir, you probably should be entitled to bring your blow tube into the bathroom.
Right.
And blow weed smoke into the blow tube.
What I'm saying, though, there's always an outlier. There's always some position that would go against the grain on that, like you're managing a record store or something.
Yeah.
But if you're working, if you're in an office down in the loop and you've got to do that to get through the day, every day, that's kind of a problem. The best, though, was I knew this guy.
Yeah.
And he used to work with a buddy of mine. He was an electrician. And he would drink all day, but he would put his booze inside of a coffee cup. And so he would be like, I don't know, whatever you do when you're an electrician, like riveting the wires down.
Whatever.
Yeah. You know, 120, 220, whatever
that's
it takes.
That's right.
220, 221, whatever it takes. And while he was going through his work day, he would like be, you know, hammering stuff down and connecting wires. And then he would grab the coffee cup and he would blow on it and like do the whole coffee ceremony. Like, oh, yeah, okay. But it was like alcohol. But
he
was
Seriously, who the hell picks up a coffee cup unless it's like straight out of the barista's hand at Starbucks? Because that stuff is like molten lava.
Yeah.
But other than that, who needs to blow on their coffee?
Well, this guy would do this while he was driving. Like he did this all the time. He always had booze on him in a coffee cup.
Wow.
And he always kind of played it up like, you know, looking for a cream and sugar, wouldn't throw it in there. But then, you know, then you would blow on the coffee to make sure it was cool enough, but it was booze.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Talk about taking the charade. He thought it out. He thought he was getting away with something.
Oh, yeah. Dude, like, there's...
Stir it up.
Oh, dude, there's all sorts of ways.
Stir up your scotch.
Yeah. Now, you look at me, it's not so bad. Like, okay, once every March, I kind of drift off for a little while to watch some college basketball, World Cup, European Championships in the summertime.
Yeah, now
that
the list
that
is
out.
Getting longer and longer. World Baseball Classic.
No.
Masters.
No, I don't do that. So, I mean, it's not that bad. And then at work for the Cubs season this year, I'm going to have like a little mini radio at work where I can hear the game, but that's hearing the game while you're doing other stuff. That's no different than listening to music.
That doesn't lower productivity.
No, I don't think so. But
I knew a dude who, well, I knew of a dude who was alleged to have drank his days away as well. He was an engineer for a radio station, and they had like, you know, so radio stations will normally have some building where the program department is in the crappy building, and then adjacent to that is a nicer building where the salespeople are. And then like miles away is the transmitter building or some other like, you know, structure. And, like, that's, like, usually rat-infested, and it sucks, right? This guy, I guess, is engineer. After he left the company, like, the new engineer went to, like, you know, kind of inventory what this character had been doing for years. And I guess this building was like floor to ceiling, in the drawers of the desks, like everywhere you can imagine. It was teeming with tall boy Budweiser cans.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like thousands and thousands
that was
of tall
a man,
boys.
He was not worried about oversight.
No.
At all.
No, no, no. And this guy, if I recall correctly, he also had some sort of like a problem, like a smell problem. Like he stunk, but it was like a clinically, medically diagnosed like issue. And I want to say it even smelled like rotting fish.
Ugh.
And so I think that he got used to just being on his own because nobody wanted stanky around, you know, the offices, not even the programming building. So they were like, yeah, they like it better that I'm miles away. So I could just spend my days with my boys, my tall boys.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, you know, there's so many ways though that people like get through their workday. Just that, you know, whether it's a tall boy, whether it's marijuana.
Yeah, I got to think that Facebook now has, like, if there are, like, I want to hear what Challenger Gray and Christmas has to say about Facebook. Like, if the tournament is costing $4 billion, Facebook has to cost $40
billion. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I know I check it out during the day.
Yeah, and I think that it's better to like kind of just use Facebook when you're on the toilet, I think. So you grab your phone, you go to the toilet, you know, you're again, like you say, you're multitasking anyway. So that's acceptable to me. But like if you're sitting at your desk,
yeah.
I guess that's ultimately what I'm wondering is like, well, when you're at your desk, like the ball's on you to be at your desk. You really didn't care if they would have demanded like, give me your key, you're fired. You wouldn't have cared about that job. You couldn't have when you were watching the tournament. Because, like, that is so brazen, so out there, so beyond checking Facebook while you're, you know, dropping the Cosby kids off at the pool. Can I not say that anymore now that he's an accused rapist?
I don't know. It just struck me as weird that you brought that up. It just always sounds so weird. Like, why does it have to be the Cosby kids?
Well, they were, you know, they were once America's leading black family. So it's just...
why does it have to be... It's just so weird. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's a small thing. I just find it like... I'm like, oh, that's a little bit more... I know what you're talking about. And it's this docile thing going to drop a deuce. But it just seems so much more disrespectful than it really needs to be. It just seems like, why can't it just be, I've always thought that, why can't it just be the kids at the pool?
Yeah, why couldn't it have been the cast of Full House?
I don't know. Why? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't want the Fuller House to be that full or something, but I've just always.
No, you think it's disrespectful to Malcolm Jamal Warner.
I just do. Like, yeah, I don't know.
I would love to ask him, like, like point blank, Malcolm, I need to know. Dropping the Cosby kids off at the pool. How upset does that make you?
It has to. I would say that I think it's something people say that they don't think about in the same way that other people will say, it's retarded, man. I hate that. Oh, I hate when people say something's retarded, but you don't think about it. But that's the Cosby kids at the pool... I think there's a layer of insult. I think it's become such a natural thing to say that I think people aren't really quite aware that there's like another unnecessary level of insult.
Yeah, I never really looked at it as racist at all, obviously. Obviously.
Given, you know, what we're talking about as a subject matter, like it's already kind of ridiculous. But when you said that, I even just kind of shivered. Like,
I can't believe he just played Rudy like that.
Yeah.
Man, oh man. Okay.
But it's good that we talk about this stuff.
Okay, well, cleansing breath. Okay, maybe I'll revisit, maybe I'll drop that from my vernacular. I'll think about it.
Okay.
I didn't mean any disrespect.
I know that you didn't. I know that most people don't when they say it. I don't think they think about it.
So, but you sitting at your desk and just being like, I don't care who comes up behind me. I don't care what they see. Like, imagine the indignity if you would have been busted out by your manager. It was like, get out, Jones, get out, grab your Rolodex.
Yeah.
Like, so leave the Rolodex, grab the TV, leave the gun, grab the cannolis.
Yeah,
and then he
yeah.
escorted you 16 feet out to the front door.
I never thought about that.
With your personal
that.
Effects in a shoebox.
I never thought about
that. Consisting of a TV.
Yeah. I never thought about it. It just
you weren't even like, am I willing to lose my job in this sort of an, you know, humiliating way?
No, never occurred to me.
You never did the calculation.
No, I just think, well, I don't know. I just think a lot of people, I think there's some level of acceptance with the NCAA tournament. Now, if I got busted drinking booze in a coffee cup or smoking up on my lunch break, I think that would be a little bit different. If I was looking at inappropriate items on company computer, I actually did know this other guy who he had a great job at a local electrical engineering firm. This was a big company around for like over 90 years. They did stuff like at the O'Hare Expansion Project and all the major universities in Chicago. Strong company. And this guy on the company computer would just watch porn all day.
Wow.
All day. And then they confronted him about it. And he just said, I'm not going to, I get my work done and I'm not going to stop how I go about doing it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they fired him.
He's gone. Yeah.
But did they fire him over watching porn?
Oh yeah. They were just like, we can't have this. Like, A, you're using our computers for this sort of material. And B, some woman walks into the office.
Man, he's unapologetic.
Oh yeah.
He was like, dude, I do a great job.
Yeah.
I make great sausage. You don't want to see how I make sausage.
Exactly. Exactly. Then he was just like, I'm not changing.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I read this article about lost productivity due to the tournament, I my mind does go to that. How much productivity? First, I thought about Facebook, and then I thought, how much productivity is lost due to sex?
I know of a guy who lost productivity due to the actual act.
Due to the act of sex?
Yeah.
All right, hold on. Hold on just a cotton picket minute. He got busted having sex on the job.
He did.
He got nice. All right, this is what I'm after. Because I bet it makes the $4 billion and the $40 billion lost due to Facebook look like a drop in the bucket. Kind of gross.
Yeah.
But the bucket has many drops in it when it comes to sex in the workplace. We'll talk about this next. Jones and Mike.
Another Pacific Rim Omega customer speaks.
My name is Tony G. I was very impressed by taking the product and the purity of the pharmaceutical grade of the omega-3 fish oil. I really felt very, very good by taking the product. As far as my mood, I noticed the collagen in my face and some of the lines that have disappeared, my nails, my hair. I highly recommend this product, Pacific Rim. I really, really enjoy the product, and I look forward to purchasing more products in the future.
Find out what Tony and thousands of other people know. Pacific Rim Omegas are the best thing you can do for your health. And get 59% off your order right now when you take advantage of this special exclusive offer. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com right now and save 59% off your order of Pacific Rim Omegas, or call 877-324-4227. That's radio.mydailyomega.com. radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike. Losing productivity in the workplace due to things you shouldn't be doing, like drinking beer. This is why I just do it out in the open. I can't believe you won't have a banquet with me while we're talking about this.
No, because I'm working.
Yeah, you're working. You're watching the NCAA tournament while you're working.
Because that's what we are the men of the people.
Yeah.
And that's what the people are watching.
That's what the people are wasting their time doing. So I think that Facebook has to be far and away the number one time waster at work. However, I think a number two in that would be smoking cigarettes. People going down for ciggy breaks, you know, every couple of hours.
Yeah.
You know those people bug you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They have to have one before they go on their lunch break. Then they go on their lunch break. And then before they come back up, they have to have one on their lunch break. And then they have to have two other ones.
Yeah.
Two other. Then they have to have two other separate cigarette breaks during the course of the day.
And I think, isn't it, you know, it's been forever since I knew, like, labor laws, but I think, aren't you entitled to, like, by law, in an 8-hour shift, they have to give you, like, 2 15-minute breaks?
Yes.
Doesn't that sound right?
Yes.
I'm kind of thinking back to when I worked in the paint department at Sears.
I think it's a 30-minute lunch and then 2 15-minute breaks.
And so if you, and I don't take 15-minute breaks. That seems like something, like, they would make me do it, like, at Sears or something. But, like, I, you know, when I was 16, mm-hmm. I loved it. So I don't, but as an adult, I don't know, like, sit around and goes, well, it's break time. And I think in blue-collar world, that absolutely, that's how you mark time.
Yeah, oh, I think so.
Your 15-minute break comes at, like, 10 a.m. You break it around noonish for lunch. That turns into, like, an hour, hour and a half, depending on your blue-collar job. And then at around 3-ish, you know, you go and you get your 15-minute break.
Yeah.
But, like, in white-collar world, we don't do that. So I wonder if smokers don't just rationalize, like, oh, yeah, you know, and I don't take 15-minute breaks, so I take, like, 7 5-minute, you know, smoke breaks.
They get it in however they can get it in.
And if you don't smoke, though, it kind of pisses you off, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there are times where, yeah, there are definitely times in a work day when someone's like, well, hang on, I'm just going to have a quick cigarette, then I'm going to come up and be like, you just had one. Well, it was before lunch.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, now I got to wait for another one?
That's the problem with smoking, is that you do it and then you want to do it more. It's the problem with all drugs, really. So that you probably shouldn't even smoke at all during the work day. It's not going to make you feel better. You're going to want to do it again 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
So smoking would be on the list. But then, you know, I've always said that sex in the workplace, it's no good. I remember going to a superior years ago, not that long ago, actually, and being like, hey, do you know that so-and-so and so-and-so are screwing?
He
was just like, yeah, so? And I'm like, you can't allow that. Like, that's going to lead to problems. It always leads to problems.
Well,
and
why?
He gave me a look like, what planet are you from?
Well, why?
And I was like, I don't know. And I want you to help me find the planet I'm from, and I want to go back there.
And why did you care? Was it a matter of productivity, or
no?
Like,
I wasn't busting them out.
Those two people were married separately, and this is going to explode.
Well, there's that.
What was the
explosion.
Issue?
It always leads to problems. Whether people think that that person is favoring that person in just business dealings, you know, inter-office squabbles. It just, when the workforce knows that two people are banging, it leads to problems.
Oh.
The fraternization of workers, I believe, should always be discouraged. It just leads to morale issues. Not moral issues. I don't even care. But morale issues. Put the E on that word.
Okay.
So I'm always against that. And the incessant search. Plus, it lets everybody know, hey, man, it's open season. Stick your pickle wherever. And then that's what people are thinking about all the time. Instead of thinking about what we should be working on. So I think that sex, far and away, has to be the biggest time waster at work.
The biggest time waster? I don't
yes.
know. Though, I did work with a guy once who, he was one of these guys where during the shift, it was one of his favorite topics was to talk about when was it okay to cheat on a woman. And he would just create scenario after scenario. Like, okay, well, then let's say you're married and your wife is in this accident and the accident causes her where she can't have sex anymore. I mean, she can't ever again. It's done. Like, the accident, like, messed that up and now she can't.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to cheat on her then, right? And it was just constantly, you know, no matter what the answer was, unless you were like, oh, yeah, definitely, totally. Unless that was the answer, it was just like, okay, but now let's say.
He would just come up with these crazy hypotheticals?
Because he just, yeah. And I just think it was on his mind 24/7.
Yeah.
And I think he was one of these guys who just wanted to, I think he maybe knew, okay, I think I have a depraved brain. And this is the way that I'll find out the other people that I'm working with.
Yeah.
They have depraved brains as well. Therefore, I'm not that strange.
This was a cry for help.
You're right. Now, this guy eventually was found out, busted by another coworker of ours.
Uh-huh.
Stooping, he brought up some woman up to the studio. This is a radio station on the other side of the city, okay. as we say.
All right.
And he was stooping this woman in the studio.
Oh, right. Right in on the console?
Yes.
Where all the buttons and stuff are?
Like right there.
Oh, my.
Yep. Just going for it. And one of the
And there's
guys,
glass all around the studio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the guy... There was one of the production guys. Just he was someone who kept really weird hours. So he was just walking by, and he saw it all going on. So this dude was like constant, like couldn't stay away from it.
Did this guy get fired?
He did not.
Oh,
and he did not because
really?
He was working this overnight shift that nobody wanted to touch.
Yeah, that's so, the equivalent of you in the drool cup at the North
so,
Loop News.
Yeah, so that was his drool cup. And he was like, I know I'm protected. Short of murdering someone.
All right, Trump. But did management at least say, hey, look, man, like you can't bring women up here anymore?
No, as far as I know.
They didn't even care. That's
it wasn't
sick.
Addressed.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Oh my. Well, so there's like a famous DJ in this town, like so, that I won't mention his name, but like he allegedly was famous for like lining up like 16-year-old girls.
Whoa.
Bringing them up into the studio to like, you know, hey, you want to see the studio? And then, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like Jared Fogle type stuff?
Well, they were 16-year-old girls, so yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And was this ever brought to management's attention?
I think that it's relatively well known in the media circles, some circles, but like he's like legendary. So whatever.
Dude, what is it that...
Like you imagine like I cannot work 8 hours without my proclivity for 16-year-old girls... You know, being acted upon. I can't even wait until I get out of here. Although that was kind of part of his, you know, predatory nature. He knew that these girls would be like,
love that.
Oh my God, we're with the legendary blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And we're in, this is where he works. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was preying upon, they wouldn't be as cool like in his Buick.
Right.
Out on Sibley or whatever. So now I'm giving you clues as to who it was. All right. So this idea that people thinking about sex, whether it's pornography, I even think that probably pleasuring yourself at work is probably a bigger problem than people would want to admit.
Oh, I would think
and
so.
And I'm not, I don't think I'm being like that coworker friend of yours who was trying to just be like, I'm not weird, am I? We all do it.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
think I'm doing that right now. But am I? Have you ever?
I don't know. Oh, you're
ever,
the only.
Have you
one.
Ever pleasured yourself at work, Jones?
You're the only one that you're the one that's bringing it up. I'm the one that's just sitting here watching the tournament, just minding my own business, just watching basketball.
This is a family-friendly show, so that we need a euphemism similar to Seinfeld and their euphemism.
Right.
Pleasuring is fine. Would you accept, and this is influenced by you, waxing the flugelhorn? would that be a better flogging Molly?
No.
Filling the belly button?
No.
5-on-1?
That's actually not that bad.
Caning Michael Fay. Okay. Those are some dude ones.
Yeah, no, that's a dude.
How about, this is inspired by The Who, riding the furry donkey.
No.
Marking Twain. Putting the ring on Frodo.
Come on.
Feeding Precious Pudding.
Oh, that's awful.
Turning Japanese, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's...
How about have you ever tickled the moose knuckle at work? Would you ever play Aunt Edna's banjo at work?
Oh, my God. I didn't know that you would be... Every time we come to do this show, you're, like, never really prepared. And I don't say that in a critical way, but you're always kind of like, what are we talking about today? What do you want to do? And then all of a sudden, we get to this topic, and it's easily the most rehearsed
Those
and prepared.
Rehearsed. Those are off the top of my head.
No, but this is the most, like, I've never heard you come up with a list of, like, I want to make sure I'm going to get through this. And this is the one topic where you're, like, totally ready to go.
I have a confession to make. Just like you're watching the NCAA tournament right now, I'm caning Michael Fay right now.
See, I like caning Michael Fay.
Right now, there's a little 5-on-1 action going on.
See, I think I like caning Michael Fay.
It's really obscure. Only you and I and Michael Fay and the Singaporean government probably even remember it.
Oh, God. Yeah, that I was not ready for that one. That's good. Caning Michael Fay. Okay, we can go with that.
I think that probably if you were to do a poll, pardon the pun, I think that 60% of American workers have caned Michael Fay at work. And I think that it probably is leading to way more than $4 billion in lost productivity.
That's something. Wouldn't it be great? It would be so cool if we, what's the organization that figures this stuff out?
Lost Productivity, Challenger Grand Christmas. Should we yes, call them up and ask them?
Yeah, I would love to do that just to hear how they would respond to that.
I think we'll get John Challenger on Jones and Mike. And we'll
yes.
say, so John, a very serious topic here, lost worker productivity. We know that you're the recognized expert in the space. What percentage of Chicago workers are losing productivity for their employers by caning Michael Fay?
Yes. Oh, my God. That would be brilliant.
The look in his eyes, the glazed over look in his eye.
You know what would be even better is if he was like, well, actually, Mike, we're in the middle of a study on that. And, you know.
Okay, so I referenced him recently. The judge who was using a fleshlight, which is how it's like
another way to
like
cane
apparently,
Michael Fay,
yeah, using your hand is not enough to cane Michael Fay with. So sometimes
well,
you
it's
use
not.
This thing.
Yeah. You need a device,
and
to
it
cane
looks
Michael
like
Fay.
A mag light. And you, whatever you,
you use
simulate
it.
And stimulate, Michael Fay with it, and like his court clerk. Like, put up with this for years, and then finally busted this judge out. But he, again, one of these people, like, apparently like me, who thinks you're getting away with something, he was like, right now, the attorneys are going back and forth about a motion to dismiss. But right now, I'm getting ready to dismiss something else.
I think this is going to be, when all is said and done, this is going to be your most favorite episode of all time.
Oh, man, right now, oh, I'm getting ready to dismiss a defendant from my chambers. Okay, all right, enough of this. All right, let's get serious.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen.
Let's get serious. We'll fix it in post. All right. Okay, now then. This is very serious because it's near and dear to my heart because I'm not admitting to anything. I am not admitting to anything. I have never caned Michael Fay in any of the workplaces I've been in. But have you seen the Terry Crews videos?
I have.
Terry Crews.
Addicted to porn.
Built, lovely,
yes.
Nubian man who's on Brooklyn 911.
Very funny guy.
Which my wife loves that show. So I'm very familiar with him because of that show. And he came out with these videos. He does these videos, like, in his car, like, looking into his phone. And he did one where he, right, you know, recently, where he admitted to caning Michael Fay.
Hey, what's up, Facebook family? How you doing? It's me, Terry Crews, again. I just want to address some things real quick, man.
A nice car.
I would hope so.
The subject is dirty little secret.
Nobody wants to borrow his car, though.
You know, not after they hear this.
He has leather seats.
My dirty little secret was that I was addicted to pornography for years. Now, most of you who are on Facebook are using the internet.
That's right.
And I...
How many people were caning Michael Fay while they were watching this video?
You know someone did it. Just to be the one.
That's right.
It really,
I want him to get to the point where he talks about how he would do it all day and then day would become night. And that's
here.
Oh, where he talks about he would do it all day and then all of a sudden he would look out the window and it was nighttime.
Yeah.
And he had been caning Michael Fay all day.
Like,
and he's like, that's when I knew I had a problem. It's like, yeah, yes, you did.
I can't imagine being that addicted to something, especially when you would think, like, even in terms of relations, it would have to be very easy for him. But that he was addicted to this one behavior. It's strange to me that people really can have a porn addiction. I mean, on one end, I like where you where it's really sun up to sun down. And I know there are people like that, and it boggles my mind that people, like I had spoke about in the previous segment, where I knew of a guy who had a great six-figure paying job, and he was just like, I can do my work, I can watch my internet porn, leave me alone, I'm not changing my ways. Like, there's something about drugs and alcohol where you go, there's some chemical reaction.
Yeah.
There's some connection in your brain that's making you do that. Now, sexually, there's obviously connections and reactions in your brain, but it just, it's amazing to me that porn could create such a strong behavioral synapse or connection that you just, you couldn't control that. And then, you know, I think about something like this with Terry Crews, and you think, like, where are future generations going to go with this? Like, you look at young people now, like, kind of doing the whole Snapchat, Kylie Jenner taking pictures of themselves thing, mm-hmm. and where that's really going to go. Or like you even look at like when you were a kid, you talked about, you know, just racing out to the mailbox just to get the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue for you and your brother before your mom found it.
That's right. Using it to, when day would become night and we were still viewing it.
Yes.
That's when we knew we had a problem.
But now, like for your kids, that's not even an issue, or anybody's kids.
And that, I think that that is the essential problem. I've read studies that have shown that that's the problem with pornography, is that, first of all, Terry, love it. He didn't get, you know, ostracized or anything. People were like, yeah, thank you very much for coming forward. A celebrity who's still relevant and on TV and all of that, who's copping to something so humiliating, honestly. Awesome. Kudos to you.
Yeah, I do give him credit for that.
Yeah. And so I've seen studies that say that that's the problem with pornography, is that in our little tiny man brains, like you see an image and then it's not like you're satiated by that or sated by that image. You immediately have a need, like a drug addict. You need to have another similar image. And that's how it perpetuates itself, you know, seconds into minutes, minutes into hours, hours into, you know, chunks of the day.
Yeah.
And so you can't ever fill that bottomless pit with more images. I've tried. Me and Michael Fay have tried, and it is a bottomless pit.
I guess, but I wouldn't say you do this. You're not a sun up to sun down person.
No, well, I don't even have the time, the proximity, the solitude.
But you
solitude.
Would think like a Terry Crews wouldn't either.
But no, actually someone like him, he's on the set and those TV shows are actually grueling days, I guess, where it's like 18, 20 hour days sometimes if they're really under the gun. And he's in a trailer, I guess, for large parts of that day. Like, you know, those dudes, like they walk on and do their lines and they're back in the trailer for 4 hours.
I know, but could you imagine going to participate in that behavior?
And yeah.
But with the pressure of at any moment.
Yeah.
All right, Terry, we're ready to go.
Well, right. I would have to be like, oh my God. Yeah, I absolutely have to pleasure myself if I have to go and laugh at Andy Samberg's jokes. One more scene. There's not enough. Not enough caning Michael Fay to make that work. I can see how someone like him has the solitude. And he actually goes on in these videos. He did a couple of videos. Very intimate details about his addiction. And he talks about how his wife knew about it and she was threatening, I think, to leave him over it. And that's when he's like, all right, enough's enough.
Good Lord.
So, yeah, I wonder how many people, and now I'm going to be watching, creeping over my cubicle wall. Boy, that guy's getting up again, bringing his phone. This is the 16th time today. I wonder if he's like Terry Crews.
Meanwhile, the poor diabetic is just going off to get his shots in, and I know what he's doing.
They got pumps for that. They got pumps, the normal sort of pumps for that sort of thing. There's no reason to go into the bathroom 16 times a day if you're diabetic anymore. Get with the times, Jones.
I just can't wait to... I want to be a fly on the wall when you walk into your manager now, your current manager, and try to address your coworkers caning Michael Fay. And just to see the look on his face, like, excuse me, what?
Yeah, you're a real modern man. My manager's a woman. Get with the times, Jones. All right, we're going to feel like real Americans up next. It's Jones and Mike.
Have you ever listened to a radio show and thought, I could do better than that? Who hasn't? But have you ever thought about actually doing your own show? Now that seems a little more daunting for most people. Hosting your own show helps spread the word about you and your expertise, your business, product or service, charity, or any organization at all. When you have your own show, people listen to you, get the credibility, authority, and visibility you deserve. Chicago Pod Show has the studios, equipment, people, and experience to help you launch your own show almost instantly. Host a show that's heard 24/7 on iTunes, YouTube, mobile apps, websites, or even on the radio. Chicago Pod Show does it all for you. All you have to do is be the star or the expert you already are. Find out how easy getting your own soapbox can be. Visit ChicagoPodShow.com or call 312-725-8017. ChicagoPodShow.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at JonesandMike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
It's Jones and Mike. When I was a wee lad, Jones, growing up in the southwest suburbs of Chicago, long before I had caning Michael Fay to new heights, to new depths, frankly, of depravity, I really bought in wholesale into this notion of America being this great power during the Cold War. Like, as a child in the 80s, you know, especially right around the time of that movie, The Day After, with Jason Robards.
Oh, yeah.
When, like, they simulated, like, what it would be like in the first couple of days after a nuclear attack. And in the movie, you didn't get just, like, turned to dust. You turned into, like, this, like, blackened, like, burned up effigy version of yourself. Like, the nuclear bomb, like, turned everybody into, like, blackened mannequins. And so that was, like, a really, you know, visually crystallizing difficult thing for children to see back in the 80s. And so we were real, like, you know, down with the USSR, and real, like, jingoistic.
Yeah.
And big on American power and all that. And now, as I am a Michael Fay caner as an adult, I compartmentalize my caning Michael Fainess, and I also have compartmentalized my feelings for America being this great power. In fact, as you know, I am this kind of anti-war guy. I don't get out there with the bullhorn necessarily, but I'm constantly talking about the dangers of American imperialism and how, and I decry how we've been at war now for 14 straight years. And nobody seems to want any of these wars to end anytime soon, and I'm kind of disgusted by it. But I must confess that even as I'm out decrying those things, there are times that I look back on my childhood and I think, wow, wouldn't it be great to be that little boy again who was all about, like, American might and Americans beating the Russians and Americans being the best and all that stuff that happened in the early 80s after the depression of the 70s in terms of the American psyche. In the 80s, we got kind of, you know, we puffed out our chests a little bit about being Americans.
Yes, I love it.
So this week when you sent me this article, it really struck that chord for me. It brought me back to, like, 1983, being a seven-year-old boy. You sent me the article from the mythical Business Insider.
I know. It's one of our greatest sources of material.
And we're not sure if it's, like, a blog and, like, anybody can write for it. It's just, it seems like the articles are real but fake.
Right, right.
We're not sure if it's a trusted source or not.
I know. But we go to it often.
So you dig up this article called "How Long Would the U.S. Military Last in a War Against the Rest of the World?"
Yes.
Which is, just sounds like something that a seven-year-old boy would write.
Right. Absolutely. And when I read the contents of it, I have to admit, like a seven-year-old boy, I was like, yes, you're right. This is awesome.
You're goddamn right. We're the best.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was great. It was great. So the idea is that if it was America against everybody, just everybody, and we have to
just
use our
full... Just a free-for-all Donnybrook.
We have to use the full weight of our military might, we could beat everybody. And when I read that, I was like so jazzed.
Crazy, dude, to like think of like Guatemalans.
Everybody.
Panamanians coming up from the south.
I loved it. I loved reading that. And had I read it and it said, oh, we would be destroyed in 6 minutes, I'd be like, nah, come on, 6 minutes, I don't buy that.
6 minutes, we'd
but
make,
I would never
we'd make at least an hour.
Yeah, I would never believe that we could defeat the whole world. But then when someone was willing to tell me, when someone could tell me that and present some statistics that backed up that theory, I was all about it. I was just like, oh my God, so red, white, and blue. I loved reading that.
Yeah, I could see you in your Gold Coast efficiency, Club 21 West, just shouting at the top of your lungs.
Oh, I was loving it. I was loving it.
Doing push-ups.
America!
Yeah, doing push-ups with your shirt off.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great. Well, it's one of those things where, like, you don't, you really kind of want to get out of that. I mean, in reality, you want to get out of that constant cycle of just steady war. It will never happen. This is the world that we live in. It will always be this way. But,
well, I don't understand why that's such a fait accompli. It's like, oh, no, we're just perpetually going to be at war forever.
I'm just saying.
But that's really how our regime has set it up. No, the war on terror, there is no end. That they actually nefariously kind of dripped that out in the early days of this nonsense in 2001, 2, and 3 by saying, you know, well, we're facing a 100-year war here. And it's like, really? 100 years of war?
Well, but even outside of the United States, I do just think it's, in terms of a power struggle, I think it's just, it's man's nature to fight, to battle, to go to war. I just think that's kind of, it's sadly, on some level, just naturally, if it's not in all of us, it's in those that are willing to go out there and try to seek and gain power.
Well, and it seems to be particularly part of the American man's mindset. But, like, in our country's history, I read, like, you know, I'm not going to do the math for you, how old this country is. This is a timeless show. You could be listening to this in the year 2042. And it'll hold up. But, like, for like 73% of our nation's history, we've been at war. So clearly, it's an American export.
It is. And there's a part of me, and obviously, it would be wonderful if one day I looked up and went, wow, not one military action in any way, shape, or form happened within the last 365 days. But when I read that we could destroy the world, every other country, in an all-out battle,
yeah,
I was like beaming with pride. I was like, you're damn right we could.
You're goddamn anyway. Right we could.
Yes. Yes.
And this article gives, like, it is like a, it's like a 7-year-old boy and his father who actually, you know, works.
Oh, yeah. It's still like we got more planes.
Martin. Yeah.
We got more. And, like, there's even that line in there, which I love, where they were talking about our Navy and our power, you know, in the seas, how many nuclear submarines we have and nuclear powered aircraft carriers. And then at one point they put in parentheses, so keep that in mind if you try to start a sea battle with us, China or North Korea. And I was just like, yeah. There was that like tone of like the 7-year-old boy, like
really,
we could destroy really? Everybody, and I'm going to start naming names.
Yeah, I mean, does North Korea even have like a navy? Like
no, but they have a 21-year-old student from the University of Virginia that's going to be doing hard time.
Yeah, what did this? What did this moron do? How does a kid from Virginia get arrested in North Korea?
Well, he was doing some tour in North Korea, and then he tried to take a political sign and stuff it into a suitcase.
Like the modern Michael Fay.
Yeah.
Like an American abroad, acting American-y.
Yeah, although he's acting more 21-y. I felt bad. I mean, it's just, if you ever see the press conference, it's like stomach churning. He's like, oh, he just goes into pieces. It's just awful to watch.
And he got 15 years of hard labor.
Yep.
Which, okay, so he's how old? 21?
Yeah.
Let's say that he does half of that, 7 years. Like, he's going to be ripped.
Well, I don't think it's like...
Like, do you think he'd be looking at the bright side?
No,
like,
dude, I don't think so.
Imagine the chicks I'll get.
No way.
When I get back.
Dude, it's going to be... Yeah, but they're not, like, doing stuff where he's going to be, like, ripped. He's going to be, like...
Making Apple phones.
Yeah, he's going to be doing, like, pulling, like, corn kernels out of fecal matter 20 hours a day.
Like, is that what hard labor? Oh, it's like, it's hard to do.
I don't know what it's going to
breaking rocks and stuff, like pointless hard labor. Like that kid that we hated in high school. And then somebody saw him a few years after high school and he was standing on a mound of like rocks with a sledgehammer first thing in the morning. And then the dude like came back from work and like the dude was still standing on the mounds of rock.
Yeah.
Beating it with a sledgehammer.
Well, I think there's...
We all kind of enjoyed that. We were like, that guy was a jerk.
I think there was... Well, I was all right with him. But I think it's going to be a matter of whatever work you're doing, you're not going to get the caloric intake nor the rest to really help build you up. I think it's going to be
where the corn kernels and the fecal matter, I think, come in.
Yeah.
They feed you.
I think this is going to be a pretty miserable experience for this young man.
Okay, so he took a political sign, Kim Jong-un, one of those signs extolling him as, you know, for his 11 holes in one in his yes. only round of golf. Similar to you in the NCAA brackets.
Right.
You played once, you won, you retired. Done.
That's not true.
You're very Kim Jong-un-y when it comes to
that
the NCAA tournament.
Now you're just playing with the facts.
And you're about the same height as him, too. Odd. Has anyone actually seen Jones and Kim Jong-un in the same room?
Yeah.
But beside that, and you're very jingoistic, just like him.
No, I'm irrational, not.
Irrationally jingoistic.
I am not. I was just, give me a break. If you read that article, you know damn well, if you read that article before me, there'd be a little part of you, you'd be like, yeah, that's awesome.
No, like the, you know, I've turned into like, you know, an anti-war, like, you know, red diaper doper baby, pinko commie bastard. That's what I've turned into.
You have, but there would still be...
I'd have been like, I'm disgusted by this article.
No,
but,
see,
but
that's
you
what
you sending
say.
It to me, I read it through the lens of you, of a seven-year-old boy. And I went, I see the appeal in this article.
No, see, I think if you read it on your own, there would still be that appeal there. Now, when you went out to your little dopey Naper Vegas, you know, coffee yeah, party.
That's right.
Little wine tasting.
We talked about Bernie Sanders's, you know, foreign policy.
Yeah, but you would bring this up. Hey, I don't know if anyone has gotten around to checking out the Business Insider this week, but they have.
No, I wouldn't bring that up. People would shout me down and howl at me.
Horrible article.
That's like the Onion
about our military mind.
It's like the Onion for business news. You're an idiot. So in this article, they break out how it would go down. And they do it through, you know, sea power, through land power, through air power. And it gives you these statistics about how, like, when it comes to naval power, the United States, our Navy is as big as the next seven navies combined.
That's
which
awesome.
by then, you know, you can then go, well, then the next 100, you know, navies in the world, like how many countries have a navy?
Yeah, no.
There's only like 10 navies in the world.
Right, yeah. The next 100 countries probably combine for like 3 boats.
Right on. So our naval power, and, you know, not only is it massive, but it's way more sophisticated. And it just does the exact same formula for land power, like our tanks. Like it pretty much goes and like makes fun of other countries' tanks. Like they're using like patent tanks that are like from the 50s and like we have tanks that like, you know, hover above the ground.
Well, and
they actually qualify as planes.
It's funny because back in World War II, the Germans, they had, you know, we had our tanks, they had their tanks, and there was a German general who was to have said one German tank was worth 4 American tanks. But the problem was the Americans always had a fifth. So now when you think like we now still have that 5-to-1 advantage ratio, and now we also have the best stuff. Like we were the heroes of World War II simply just out of just production. We just cranked it out.
That's right. Henry Ford won us World War II.
Yeah, you know, building like bombers in like 39 minutes. Like if you ever see those statistics, it's just mind blowing. But now to see that we have that level of production somewhat, it's just not the same, but a similar level of production, at least as compared to other countries. And we also have the best stuff.
Yeah, really unstoppable.
Suck it, Belgium.
That's right. Well, and this is the thing I like about this, because it doesn't just go like, if China or Russia ever get out of line, here's how it's going to go down. It actually starts off with, here's how it would go down if UK and France and South Korea wanted to join a battle against us. we'd crush them. Because, like, you think, like, oh, it's, like, NATO is, like, all of these countries, and the U.S. is part of it. But in reality, it's, like, it's the U.S., and they literally just, you know, paint the planes with NATO, you know, flags or whatever on them, and then they call it a NATO plane. It's, like, it's not, there is no NATO, it's the United States, and then all these other countries kind of tack on to it. So we're kind of like their police force, which is what disgusts me. But I know that it's all part of this like little secret economic cabal. Like, okay, we're going to allow the dollar to be the world, you know, currency. And we're all going to take it in the shorts when it comes to trade. And we all have to pay like double for a TV. And you guys get all these cheap, you know, economic, you know, advantages by having the currency reserve be the dollar. But in exchange for that, you got to like go and like, you know, put missiles everywhere and have your soldiers all over Europe and Asia and protect us. Okay, great. That's like the deal.
Yeah.
But I liked how this article didn't buy into like, oh, well, if Russia or China, what if UK and France lost their friggin' minds because Trumpy becomes president and they decided to become belligerent? Here's how it would go down.
And, Trump would take be the guy minutes. To do it.
And that's why that man has my vote. Any man who will take on France and the UK has my vote.
Wouldn't it be if Trump, I cannot imagine he'll get elected, but if he did, wouldn't it be great if he came out on his first day and he was wearing a blue turban?
That's right. And he just laughed at
us. But he just did it.
Laughs at us. And he's like, I just wanted to let you know, you people know, I am invading London. We're taking out, we have boats, attack boats going down the Thames right now.
Oh, that would be great, just to fulfill that prophecy of the man in the blue turban.
Yeah, you're a real Nostradamus guy all of a sudden. I don't know what that is.
That would be the best.
Maybe you've always been a Nostradamus guy, and Nostradamus said it would be a man in a blue turban that would lead to the Third Great War.
Yes, and that's, I think, given our military might, given how close Donald Trump is getting to the proverbial football, for those in the know, telling you, why not have a little fun with it? In your first day in office, come out in a blue turban. I would do it. I would absolutely do it.
This article loses weight with me when it goes, and I quote, and that's even before the U.S. Coast Guard gets into the mix.
Yeah!
And it gives you all these awesome statistics about the Coast Guard, and then it ends with, so attacking America across the water is a horrible idea. Got that, North Korea and China? That's the part you were talking about,
dude. I love
that.
I love that.
Man, Trump's gonna love having all these resources at his disposal.
I think honestly he is a guy who would enjoy those toys more than everybody else.
No, Obama's loved it. He's loved it.
Yeah, but Trump will, come on. Trump will enjoy it. He will revel in it more than anyone else. Just sitting there atop his throne like Caligula.
Yeah, but will Trump break Bill Clinton's record for caning Michael Faye in the White House?
I don't think he can do it. I don't think he's got, age is not on his side, and I can't imagine stamina is either.